Good morning, everybody. Hi, I'm Mindy. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. But I get to play music here today. I'm so excited. So I was in communication with Reverend Sarah. We were talking about risk. So I picked a couple of my songs that I think go with it, the theme. Because sometimes when you take a risk, it's like you're a little bird and you have to kind of learn how to fly by just like taking the big risk of trying for the first time to just jump out of the nest and go for it. Something's stirring, something's waking up. Something's stirring down there in the nest. I see a feather peeking over the top. We don't want to clip your wings. We just want to hear you sing as long as you want. Whatever you'd like to, as loud as high or as low. Oh, bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why don't you? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why don't you? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why? Winter was hard as rocks, but rocks make diamonds too. A sweet little broken bird, puff out your chest, unfold your broken wing. You've got a song to sing, I know you do. We don't want to clip your wings. We just want to hear you sing as long as you want, whatever you'd like to, as loud as high or as low. Oh, bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why don't you? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why don't you? Bird, won't you fly? Why don't you fly? Why? Unknot your wing, fling yourself in the air. You know how to fly, so why dare you? So why dare you? Dare you to jump? We won't let you fall, so jump. We'll set you here on this stump, and we'll push you. You'll be forced to fly, and fly you will.
Thank you, Mindy. That was a great way to start the morning. Good morning and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. My name is Marissa Larson and I'm the convener today. This morning we continue our discussion of the theme risk. And thank you to Mindy Dillard and Reverend Sarah Oglesby Dunnigan for sharing their musical talents and insights with us today. I'm just going to keep this going, so Reverend Sarah has an announcement for us, and then I'll do the rest.
So mine is just a really quick, we're doing, instead of a walk for education, a walk to restore the revenue, which involves all kinds of different parts of our state that need revenue. And if you want to learn more about that, you can look at the flyer. I've left some with your fair trade. You can look at the Kansas People's Agenda Facebook page, and it's posted in some other, there's information on the flyer. But if you want to walk, there's a group going from Manhattan to Topeka, a group going from Emporia to Topeka, and a group going from Miriam to Topeka. You don't have to walk all of it, but if you wanted to, it's about 20 miles a day for 3 days, and then a big rally on the 27th in the Capitol. So we would love to have you, you know, support walkers, be a walker, join in for a little bit of, we have a couple rallies along the way, or show up for the rally in Topeka on Monday. So if you want more information after service, I'm happy to share it with you.
And I won't read through all of them, but we have quite a few announcements in the program. So some of the ones coming up the soonest are Muslim Advocacy Day, which is tomorrow at the state capitol in Topeka. And then next Saturday, we have St. Patrick's Day Parade, and then several other things here to start taking note of. So Jake is going to help me light the chalice this morning. Out of our separate lives we come, to walk this path together for an hour or a day, for a week or a month, or a series of months and years. For this space of time we travel together, making much or little or nothing at all of the fact that another walks beside us. We can keep our eyes cast down, protecting ourselves from the pain we risk.
You blew out the chalice.
He's taking the risk of lighting the chalice.
There you go.
We can keep our eyes cast down, protecting ourselves from the pain we risk whenever we allow another human being to touch us, living safe little lives inside our sterile wrappings. Or we can reach out, risking a little or a lot or every coin we have, because we believe that loving and being loved is the only game in town. The choice is ours. Those who risk much lose much, but they are also the only ones who ever win. Please join me in our opening hymn, 106, Who Would True Valor See? Now's the time we come together, and sometimes it's risky, sometimes it's not, to share our joys or concerns and sorrows. So if you have anything you'd like to share, please raise your hand. We'll bring the microphone around.
Good morning, Susan Adamchak. Some of you know that my father has had a number of health issues in recent months, and about a month ago, I really thought he was at death's door. He was hospitalized for 10 days. Not only he's pulling a Benjamin Button on me, he continues to lose weight, which is a good thing because it helps his heart and lungs, and he's been weaned off oxygen, which he had been using 24/7 for the last 9 months. So, and we're having Chinese food for lunch today. So, thank you all for your kind thoughts.
Lily Colburn, I recently found out that I was accepted to the Young Women's Political Leadership Program, which is a week-long program in Washington, D.C. this summer. It's put on by Running Start. Over 4,000 people apply each year, and only 60 get in. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you for all the joys and concerns shared and unshared. We hold those in our hearts. Now we have special music with Mindy again.
So that first song I sang about the little bird who flies, I had a really bad relationship with that song for a long time because I just thought it was kind of untruthful, because sometimes, to be honest, like the wings you make, they don't work. I know, right? Yeah, so I wrote an addendum to the song. So this is what happens to the little bird when maybe the wings don't work and they end up down in the dirt, or, you know, whatever that means to you. Things don't go as planned. Because that's not the end either. Oh, little bird, are you hurt? You've fallen down and you're lying in the dirt. Little bird among the weeds, you're born to fly, you're born to get back to the trees. Hey, little bird, there's so much left to discover. Still sing, your song will help you recover. Though you've been hurt, you still can fly. Hey, little bird, won't you give it a try? Hey, little bird, you try to fly or walk. Were you stunned? Was it someone throwing rocks? Hey, little bird, don't just lie there on your back. There's work to do. Don't let them win with this attack. Hey, little bird, there's so much left to discover. You can still sing, your song will help you recover. Though you've been hurt, you still can fly. Oh, little bird, won't you give it a try? Though you've been hurt, you still can fly. Oh, little bird, won't you give it a try?
So today's story for all ages is not as printed in your service, but it is an opportunity to learn a little bit about risk. So today's story is the boy who wanted a drum. And we happen to have a little boy in the audience. See this little boy? We're all 12-year-olds at heart, right? Her son was hardworking and polite. He never complained about his ragged clothes or worn shoes. And the woman wanted more than anything else to give her son a special gift. And so she went to the market to sell her grain and asked him, "When I come back, what would you like for me to bring back for you?" And he said,
"I really, really want a drum."
He wanted a drum. A drum, oh no. Well, the woman went to market, but she was pretty sure that she would not make enough money to buy a drum. So, after she'd sold her grain and bought the things she needed to take home, she really didn't have enough money for a drum, but she decided on the way back that perhaps she'd bring something back for him to play with anyway. So she found a couple of sticks, and she gave them to her son.
Wow, thank you, Mama.
And so, because he was such a good little boy, he went off to play with them. And he wandered along. He followed the storyteller. Because she knows where the next place happens. And he ran across a woman who was trying to light a fire. She took the stick. She was trying to light the fire, but she was trying to do it with cow dung. Have you ever tried to do that? And sometimes it's just not dry enough to light. What did she need? He decided to give her sticks. And so they went to... Who has my bread? Oh. Are you the one with the bread?
Oh, no, Anya.
Oh, Anya's over there. That's right. Never mind. You're not the old woman.
I went to the wrong place.
Sorry. Taking a risk, telling a story. That's right. So he found a little old woman. Come here, little old woman. Oh. And in exchange, she gave him a piece of bread. Now, the little boy wasn't very hungry, so he held on to the bread and he wandered around. And he wandered around until he found a mother whose child was very hungry and had nothing to feed him. And he decided, well... Perhaps, who did I give the bowl to? I don't remember where I put all my props. You have the room? Okay, there we go. This is the little old woman who had nothing to feed her child. So he gave her bread for her child, and she gave him a pot. There we go. Well, he didn't know what to do with the pot, and so he wandered around. And he came across a man who was crying. No, a washerwoman and his wife. He came across a washerwoman and his wife, right here in the middle. And they were arguing. And he decided to ask them what was wrong, because he took a risk. And they said, well, one of them had broken the pot that they washed their clothes in. And he said, well, that's funny, because I have a pot. And so he gave them the pot. And it just so happened that they had a warm jacket that they decided to give to him. Well, he really didn't know what to do with that. So he walked around and he walked around. And he walked around and he walked around until he found a man who was crying. He was shivering and cold, and he had not even a shirt on. He said, what's the matter? And he said, I was attacked by robbers, and they stole everything, including my shirt. And the boy said, well, I have. And the man said, I have a horse. The robbers who attacked me left a horse. You can have the horse.
Okay, so the boy was like, all right, I don't know where this is going, but here, I'll take a ride on the horse. Every little boy wants an opportunity to ride a horse. And he rode and he rode and he rode until he came across a wedding party. But this was a sad wedding party. They were sitting under a tree crying because the bridegroom had no horse to ride to the wedding on, and it would not be appropriate to show up at the wedding without a horse. And so the little boy said, well, I happen to have a horse. And what do you think the wedding party happened to have in return for the horse? Ah, they had a drum. And so the little boy returned home, drum in hand. And he said, Mama,
I got a drum.
Oh. And then he told her his story, and he played his song from deep within. And every Irishman needs a bell run. And we'll return to the necessary lessons of this story later, but for the kids who are about to go to class, what I would say is this. That giving and receiving are things that we do throughout life. And not all the gifts we receive are ours to keep. Some of the gifts we receive are gifts that we give to others. And some of them are gifts, like our musician this morning, that we give over and over and over again to other people. And that we receive over and over again. And some of them are finite, discrete objects that we pass on. But in each way, we look for the opportunities to give and to receive as we walk life's journey.
Go in love, my heart, so with you. Go in joy, I hope so too. Learning love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all we do. Go in love, my heart, so with you. Go in joy, I hope so too.
That is actually a perfect segue into, we're switching here. First, we're going to hear from Richard Pitts to tell us about Wonder Workshop. This is our Helping Hands Sunday, so Wonder Workshop is the organization that we're featuring this month.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be back here in a place that feels like you're at home.
That's
I always
right.
feel welcome coming here. It means a whole bunch to me. The Wonder Workshop Children's Museum is a community children's museum here in Manhattan. And it would not be such, it would not even be, God bless you, it would not even be in existence if it were not for the people in the community. Because we do not get funding from the city, the state, or the federal government. We have to go out and produce programs and exhibits and ask for donations, since we're a 501c3, to keep us afloat. And we've been doing this since 1989. And many of the folks in this Unitarian community has helped out tremendously. The Beemans over here are a case in point. Gene, we have the Embers, Larry Weaver. the list just goes on and on. It means everything. We have two locations, one downtown where we have our museum and exhibits. We just recently opened up a new exhibit because parents were asking for things for their infants and toddlers. So we converted one of our exhibits into an infant and toddler area. And we opened up the downstairs into a science center. And thanks to Larry Weaver, he has given us many, many ideas to make that science center interesting, fun, and challenging. And that's the whole thing about children's museums. We cannot put a value on the role that play learning has in the growth of a child. The other location we have is out in Randolph on the lake. We have a little science lab. We have a house there that's fully furnished and everything, so kids go out there and we do a lot of cooking. We do a lot of hiking. We do a lot of learning about nature. We have two tree houses. This is what your money went to last year. We put up two tree houses because many people, adults as well as kids, have never been in a tree house, so why not build one? We have a zip line out there. We have a climbing wall. We have a low ropes course out there, things to challenge our kids. But not only that, last year, through the support of you folks, we were able to work with Kansas State University and produce a documentary on the Underground Railroad. I will sit this back here because you can go online and look at history, Kansas history. History is in your own backyard that tells a story of what happened that we have the freedoms that we have right now. And it started right here in Kansas. On weekends, we also have workshops, and I'll sit this out in the lobby as well, where we partner with people. That's how we get by, through partnerships. I think I said that earlier. So we partner with the school district. We have about 50 African hand drums coming from West Africa. We take those into the school district, and we do drum circles because we think drum circles bring people together for free. When there's no school, like this Friday, we do discovery days. We take our kids out to our camp and let them discover things in nature, like building huts and on the beach or building fires and roasting marshmallows. You know, that stuff that y'all used to do is still important to us, right? We've connected with the Kansas State Chemistry Club, and they're doing something this coming Saturday called Contagious Intelligence, where they'll come in and they'll do a lot of experiments with the kids, and then do some amazing type magic shows. The list goes on. My point is that the Wonder Workshop needs you. We can't do it alone. The support that you have given us has gotten us this far. And we really appreciate you and your support so very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
hear from one of our members, Courtney Albin, about the pledge drive and supporting UU.
Good morning. Scott Tenona asked me to come and talk to you guys today just briefly about why I pledged to UU. And this made me think about the first time that my husband and I pledged. It was probably about 6 years ago, and it was the first time we'd ever pledged because we'd been to different UU congregations and visited at different places, but we had never actually joined or pledged to any of them. But then when we moved here, we knew we were going to be here for a while, and we knew we liked this community, and we wanted to have a UU community here, and so we thought it was important to join and to be part of this group. And so we joined, and not long after, we got a call from Shirley and wanted to come talk to us about pledging. And we're like, oh, great, here it goes now. They're going to ask us for money. And no fault of Shirley's at the time, when we had just moved here from California, where we had the lady that we rented our house from was really quite nosy and just butted in a lot and just really hard to deal with. And for some reason, Shirley kind of reminded us of her. So so I think that probably added to it. But it kind of changed that day, because instead of just coming and saying, oh, we need your money, give us some money, she just came in and she showed us the budget. And she showed us, this is what the money goes to, and this is how we are here. And this comes from the members. And so after that, I was like, oh, okay. Now I can understand, because this is why we're here. And at that time, they hadn't started the stewardship program. And I really enjoy the stewardship program, because it's added the piece of adding your time and your talent and your treasure. Time, talent, and treasure. So it helps me to feel like, you know, maybe if you don't have the money to give now to do for the treasure part, you maybe have some time that you can give now, or maybe you have a talent that you can give. And so that helps, you know, it helps me to know, okay, right now I can give my money, right now I can give my time, or now I can do all three, this is great. But I just want you to know that, you know, everybody has hard times doing certain times, giving their time or giving their money, but that's why we're here. If you really love this congregation, this is what you need to do to help it stay here and stay strong and to keep growing like we have been over the last few years. Because it's true, because anything you see here, the music that's being played, John and Lou coming here on Sundays, our visitors coming here on Sundays, helping hands, all of that comes from somebody giving their time, somebody giving their talents, and somebody giving their treasure. And yeah, maybe you do that and you haven't pledged, but I think pledging just gives that extra commitment. You write it down, and that helps you commit, and it helps the congregation know that you're committing to them. So just give it a thought this year, because it'd really be great. Thank you.
Today's reading, I am reading A Blessing for Risk Takers and Failures by Robin Tanner. Today we share in blessing for losers, risk takers, all failures far and wide. Blessed are they who fall in the mud, who jump with gusto and rip their pants, who skin the elbows and bruise the ego, for they shall know the sweetness of risk. Blessed are they who make giant mistakes, whose intentions are good but impact has injured, who know the hot sense of regret and ask for mercy, for their hearts will know the gift of forgiveness. Blessed are they who have seen a D or an F or a C or any letter less than perfect, who are painfully familiar with the red pen and labels as less than, for they know the wisdom in the perfect, in the imperfect. Blessed are they who try again, who dust off, who wash up, who extend the wish for peace, who return to sites of failure, who are dogged in their pursuit, for they will discover the secret to dreams. Blessed are they who refuse to listen to the naysayers, for their hearts will be houses for hope. Blessed are they who see beyond the surface of another, for they will be able to delight in the gift of compassion. Blessed are they who stop running the race to help the fellow traveler, who pick up the fallen, who stop for injured life, for they shall know the kindness of strangers. Blessed are they who wildly, boldly abandon winning, for they shall know the path of justice. We'll now sing in the Teal Hymnal, 1012, and we are taking a risk because this is the first time we've ever sung this song. So Dick is going to come up and help, and it's actually pretty easy and pretty. It's a little long, but you'll have to turn the page, but I think you'll catch on.
From the Gnostic Gospels. If you bring out what is inside you will save you. If you fail to bring out what is inside you will destroy you. So this month in my congregation and yours and several others around Kansas and around the country, we're discovering and exploring what it means to be a people of risk. And some of us have already taken several risks just in the last 30 minutes. There's a difference between what we used to see as risky and the real risk of vulnerability and authenticity, of commitment and engagement, or what Brené Brown calls wholehearted living and Mark Nepo would call authenticity. The struggles we find inside of us are powerful teachers, Mark Nepo tells us. He says that throughout time, the role of consciousness in our lives has been to help us face our own experiences and demons, to face the undiscovered country in ourselves. So, and indeed, he notes that the original meaning of the Muslim word jihad actually meant to face one's own demons. So this is the holy war. You live it all the time. We choose the distractions of vengeances sometimes rather than face the true sources of our own suffering. And are not most, if not all, of the conflicts we see writ across the international headlines born from this struggle. Mark Nepo names this challenge the art of facing things, facing ourselves, each other, and the unknown. And he defines this as courage. And he notes that cultural anthropologist Angeles Arian discovered that every indigenous culture on Earth shares a common description of the cycle of experience. And though they state it in many different ways, the statement basically says, or the central wisdom says, that what is not integrated is repeated. So we're shaped by our experiences either because we grow and are transformed by them, or we internalize them and are trapped by them, hurting ourselves and others in the process. We choose between integration and disintegration, and it takes courage to choose integration, courage to be the little bird that gets back up and tries again. Or courage to accept that you're a chicken or a penguin. I don't know. From our own suffering, we discover the capacity to transform or destroy. We also discover, as we let life unfold, that generosity is the ability, the result of our ability to see how everything goes together and how answering the needs of others depends on how we accept what we're given, sometimes as unexpected medicine, even if it's not what we want. So just as the boy in this story, letting life unfold and being a conduit for the gifts of life takes courage. Courage to wait and see what is revealed. Now, Mark Nepo teaches us about risk by telling us to try loving your fear. He says that in truth, by undressing the things we fear, or by simply loving them, it's not an easy task, we can address the real issue. The fear of being alive is a wonder that is beyond our control. Yet opening ourselves to wonder is impossible as long as we stay contained in our fear. So he asks us, through what form of love will you step over your self-defined edge of the earth? Through what form of love will you step beyond your self-defined edge of the earth? And so what I think he's asking about, and what I want to ask you all to just maybe respond, take a little risk, what I ask you is, what does risk mean to you? When you hear the word risk, what comes to mind? What's something that felt risky to you in the last week or two, or just the last 10 minutes?
Social interaction.
Social interaction, okay, back here. Okay, ambivalence. What else? Feels like a risk.
Giving up what's comfortable for what's unknown.
Ah, the unknown, giving up comfortable for something that's not sure or certain or known.
Looking at the newspaper.
Looking at the newspaper in the back.
Taking a stand for something you believe in.
Standing up for something you believe in. Okay. Worrying about how others perceive you.
Talking about risk.
Talking about risk. How do we feel when we're taking a risk? What kinds of things show up in your body or in your head that when you're trying to take a risk? What does it feel like?
Scary.
Scary?
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline?
Can certainly lead to migraines, even if that's not the kind of migraine.
Right? Migraines, some of us feel it in our tummy.
Sweaty
palms.
Heart
beating.
Blush.
Maybe you blush.
Shortness of breath.
Yeah. So I want to give you just a moment to consider a time recently when you felt vulnerable, because that's really what we're naming, right? Doing risky things feels vulnerable. And have you ever noticed that we admire vulnerability in other people, but we avoid it in ourselves? Right? That person that stands up in front of everybody else and says something, oh, that's so courageous. But somehow when we are about to take a risk, sometimes we get caught up in our own vulnerability, think we won't be good enough. I was just thinking about how coming here to a congregation on Sunday morning and engaging and building or maintaining a community, talking about pledging, talking about how we are going to make each of those activities that you do happen, that can be a pretty risky business. But we do so many things that make us feel vulnerable here that might be small, but for some of you, singing makes you feel vulnerable, right? You don't have to raise your hand, but there's people in here who are like, we're going to sing again. Ugh. Right? Or listening. Or sharing. Somebody invited somebody else to come up and talk about their experience pledging. Oh, that's so risky. I'm going to talk about money in front of a group of people. And then as you maybe get more involved, you might try new experiences, going to meetings or committees, serving as a volunteer, talking about budget and money to support the community, planning events and showing up to them. Some of them will work, some of them won't. If you're new, I hope you'll take a risk to come a few times and make a few potential friends. If you've been here for a while, you might try stepping out of your comfort zone. Meet someone new. Try a new role. Try saying no. Or even taking the risk of stepping back and letting someone else or inviting someone else into the roles that you've been doing. There's a risk that they might do it differently, but try letting them. Let's see what happens. For many of us, receiving and offering pastoral care, letting people into our lives when we need help, need comfort, we're grieving or sick or lonely, when we've lost a job or we want to try something new, these things can be huge risks too. So how can we gracefully receive? How can we receive without feeling shame? Receiving is super vulnerable, right? People see us at our worst. I mean, none of us look good in a hospital room, right? I don't. Or in desperate grief. Or if we're fighting addiction or struggling to pay our bills or recovering from a divorce. These are not our most shining moments. So receiving in these moments of need can be very hard. And then there's this whole relationship with a minister thing. Not only do we struggle to find the courage to talk to each other about our visions and hopes for our community, our personal struggles and looking for a sense of acceptance, but then there's this person whose job it is to supposed to be walking along with you through all these hard places. And what I want to tell you is that ministers like Reverend John Alou and I, we don't propose to have the answers. And we're willing to listen and to walk with you. But here we're all practicing vulnerability and wholeheartedness, ministers included. So we're also growing and changing and trying new things, and we all need room to be human, to try something out and to experiment. So this is why becoming a regular participant in a community is so challenging. It's also why we covenant with one another. We know we're not going to be perfect, right? We shouldn't strive to be. The desire to be perfect gets in the way of authenticity. So author Brené Brown shares a story about a teacher with a jar in her classroom where marbles go in for good behavior and marbles go out when the rules are broken. And I want you to consider for a moment that friendship can be like that jar. When people treat us with love and compassion, marbles go in. When people betray us or ignore us or hurt us, marbles go out. And I want you to consider who in your life is someone who represents a pretty consistently full jar. And how did they get to be so? It's important to have these marble jar friends because they help us to take risks. Essentially, risk is about disengagement versus engagement with life. It's about learning to talk about hard topics like divorce and death and loss, like mental illness and addiction and loss of independence, and face things we know won't be perfect or could potentially bring pain or loss. The people who can do this with us tend to fill our marble jar, right? They tend to be the people that we look for. According to Brené Brown, the biggest barrier to risk and engagement, or what she calls wholeheartedness, is shame or scarcity thinking. And Nepo frames this as the ability to use suffering to transform ourselves from instead of internalizing suffering and turning against ourselves and each other. But they're both really describing the same process or struggle. This is what it often sounds like. I'm not good enough. That will never work. There's not enough love or resources for all of us. Someone has to lose. So she goes and tries to sort of define shame and talk about when and why we experience it. And first she contrasts it with some other concepts, and I thought this was really important. She looks at shame versus guilt as the difference between separating the person from the doing. So as in the difference between being a liar and telling a lie. Right? There's shame when you're a liar. But if you told a lie, it's a mistake you've made that you can go back and fix. It's not a permanent state of who you are. So she says also that there's a difference between shame and guilt. And she says that between shame and guilt, the difference is that when we experience guilt, we experience that we've done something that doesn't match our values. And then she looks at shame versus humiliation, and she says that this is where somebody does something to you, and you know you didn't deserve it. So it hurts, it's uncomfortable. You know that other person was, you know, inappropriate or wrong, but it's not about you. And then finally, she contrasts shame to the pain of embarrassment, to just plain embarrassment. Like, embarrassment's just a passing situation, like, you know, farting loudly in church or something, right? It's embarrassing, you'll laugh about it later, this too shall pass. But you'll likely have a good laugh about it. And she says that the thing is, the importance in distinguishing these things is that shame is really dangerous. It's highly correlated to addiction and violence and aggression, depression, eating disorders, bullying, because we walk with that negative quality as if it is us instead of something that we can change or make better or speak out against. So I'm sure that you can think of some places in your life where you've experienced each of these, maybe shame, maybe guilt, maybe humiliation or embarrassment. And can you see the difference in the heaviness and how they impact you? So I can remember initially feeling some shame about not being able to breastfeed my first kid easily. It was sort of mother shame. It just seemed like everybody else made it look so easy. There must be something wrong with me, right? I'm not going to be a good mom. But once I saw that I was creating shame and I realized I was not alone and that my struggle was when others had too, it was actually normal. I found support through the La Leche League and other friends. And I used this strategy to move to something maybe more like just embarrassment. Oops, it's a funny story now. And some of us may have felt shame maybe in the grocery store with kids if you have them who were throwing temper tantrums. Or maybe you've bounced a check once in your life. Or perhaps you were able to distinguish these as humiliation, somebody else is acting inappropriately, not you, or guilt, you weren't living in accordance with your own values. So I experienced a couple of days of shame once when I got the first and only time I got an F in grad school, or any level of school, really. I received the grade after the course was over, and the comments on the paper gave no indication why it, merited an F, besides a comment which suggested we had differing theological perspectives on Jesus. It was a New Testament class, and I was a UU with a Lutheran instructor. And by the time we sat down to talk about it, at my insistence, I became clear that this person was an inexperienced instructor, whose academic work had not prepared him for pastoral responses to students on their ideas, much less theological differences. And after an hour with him, I moved from shame to humiliation, knowing that the F was about him and not me. I was still smart enough to finish grad school. And I decided not to make a big deal about the grade. I took a C in the course and decided not to fight it after talking to the dean. and prayed that this instructor would move on to purely academic work. I was sure that no UU congregation was going to care if I got a C in my New Testament class anyway. And so now I wear it as a badge of honor. So like Nepo, Brené Brown wants us to work on transforming our suffering into growth and paradigm shifts. So she says we need to develop something called shame resilience. And here are some of the steps she outlines. She says, recognize when it's happening, practice awareness of your expectations. You know, is this who you really want to be? And then reach out and talk to other people, share your story. So following the words of Nepo and Brown, we learn to practice self-compassion and find our own worthiness while looking for support where we need it and offering it where we can. So how do you respond to shame? Some of us and some of our less healthy responses might be things like moving away from others to disengage or silence ourselves, moving towards others, trying to appease them or please them in hopes that they won't notice what we're so ashamed of, or moving against others by getting aggressive and asserting our power in order to protect ourselves from getting hurt. And all of these responses take us out of connection. They keep us from taking risks and engaging. It's hard to catch ourselves, but when we notice we are doing one of those three things, we can ask ourselves what shame or suffering we're trying to cover up and how we can transform it into something more healthy. She also notes that women and men frequently experience shame differently. In our culture, men's shame is often connected, even those of us who think we're super feminist and this isn't us, that our expectation for men is that they be strong no matter what, and for women to have the expectation of physical beauty. So any time that we've stepped outside of these, we are in danger of experiencing a sense of shame. And I know we think we've all moved beyond it, but I still struggle with these unconsciously sometimes, and I bet some of you do too. Aging can make this worse. Men lose whatever claim they had to strength, and women lose whatever claim they had to physical beauty and the appearance of naive youthfulness. Another habit we may have that challenges our ability to live wholeheartedly is something Brené Brown calls joy foreboding. Perhaps you've done this. It definitely makes us risk averse. It's a kind of rehearsing of tragedy, right? It's when everything's going really great and the first thing that comes to your mind is what terrible thing might happen in the next moment. And you're already worrying about it and not enjoying the moment that you're in, right? Your kid is peacefully sleeping and you're already imagining the car accident or the sudden illness that will take them from you. You feel very close to your spouse and then you imagine them leaving you, because you want to be prepared for tragedy, right? One way to counteract this practice is to practice gratitude as an antidote to fear. Naming what you're grateful for and why, that's a way of allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and to have access to the joy. So what are you grateful for today? I'm grateful for my kids, my spouse, my job. What about you? Put them out there.
I'm living in relative peace in this country.
Okay, grateful for peace. What else? Just throw your little gratitudes in, a word or a phrase.
Grandkids.
Friends.
Satire.
I'm pretty grateful for that, too, actually. Restorative justice and practices are a model for practicing wholeheartedness, too, as are covenant groups and 12-step groups. When we sit in a circle together and practice listening and sharing, being open and vulnerable and honest about our experiences and feelings, we practice saying sorry or making amends. This is also a doorway to transforming suffering into joy and connection. So when we're practicing finding joy in the ordinary moments, it's just being grateful for what you have right now. Gratitude for the beautiful snow. If we can remember not to squander joy by jumping into the possible terrible thing in the next moment, but instead lean into it, we're taking a risk that will change our lives in subtle but profound ways. Here are some other practices for living wholeheartedly. Notice when you're feeling vulnerable and name the thing you're grateful for. Avoid perfectionism. The definition for perfectionism, according to Brené Brown, is addictive and destructive. It gets in the way of you showing up exactly as you are. Setting boundaries for yourself. This is an important part of owning your worthiness and protecting it. Saying no and making limits is important because you are important. And how we treat other people affects our own sense of worthiness. So connection and belonging are part of this equation because when you extend these to others, you honor your own worthiness. Treating every person who crosses your path with authenticity and care is a way of saying we are all worthy of authenticity and care, even me. And Brené Brown reminds us that intimacy is not automatic and it shouldn't be. We have to build up trust. We need to engage in building relationships to support our intimacy and sharing. So she uses the example of oversharing with someone who hasn't gained our trust as kind of a floodlight. You know that moment when somebody you've just met tells you 5 super personal, uncomfortable things, you sort of feel like they're shining a floodlight right into your face. Right? I wasn't ready for all that. Versus twinkle lights. You know, getting to know someone, sharing things as they gain your trust, as marbles are put into that jar. We know we like the twinkle lights better, right? And some folks see the world in terms of Vikings and victims. You're either one or the other. And this worldview, there's no way to access true vulnerability as it's seen as a victim behavior. There are only winners and losers, nothing else. And I don't know, but we seem to have elected some leaders who act this way, yes? The enemies of wholeheartedness are cynicism, cruelty, and coolness. So when you bump into somebody who's displaying those for to you, ask yourself whose opinions actually matter to you. And Brené Brown calls these her stretch mark friends, the people who've grown with us and been through all our failures and all of our successes and still love us and trust us. And they receive and give with us. Owning our worthiness is an act of acknowledging that we are sacred. Perhaps embracing vulnerability and overcoming numbing is ultimately about the care and feeding of our spirits, says Brené Brown. We are sacred. As a community, we seek to be engaged and wholehearted too, and we seek this in our families as well. Compassion and connection, the very things that give purpose and meaning to our lives, can only be learned if they're experienced. So a strategy that Brené Brown offers is to mind the gap. This is noticing the difference between your aspirational values and your actual practice values. How aligned are they? So, for example, are you the adult that you want your child to be? And this is a question that helps us look at this alignment. And she reminds us that we can't use fear, shame, blame, and judgment in our lives if we want to raise courageous children. So, for example, what are the aspirational values for this community? Who do you hope to be as a community? And what are the practiced ones? How does it actually show up? Where are you? Where's the gap in how we show up for each other? So as always, Brown and Nepo are clear that learning and transformation mean discomfort here and elsewhere. And one way to manage this is to use a strengths lens for your challenges and suffering, to frame your challenges through your strengths, and to also look for places of support, find mentors, get feedback. And that's also why having a covenant can be so important for our families and our communities. This is a promise to stay engaged. And finally, at the political level, we can see that we, the broader we, as in the American culture, often use shame against entire religions, against people of color, against immigrants. And this can be a practice in which we have to stand up wholeheartedly against. Speak out for and show up for, listen to others. This is a practice of wholeheartedness. And vulnerability also. Not allowing shame culture to dominate. And when we admit we still have a lot to learn about white privilege, about male privilege, about ableism or homophobia, about sexism or racism or classism, when we admit we still need to know more, that we still aren't, you know, doing everything, that that gap between who we want to be and who we are is big, that is a kind of vulnerability that also leads to wholeheartedness. So as some of you step into the messy, complicated work of political activism and social justice work, know that you are also answering the question, what does it mean to be a community of risk? But you're also taking a risk whenever you take suffering or shame and find a way to turn it into an experience of growth and shift in your inner understanding of yourself and the world around you. Your courage is all that's standing between you and the life you hope for yourself, your family, and your community. And so I close with these words from Madeline Ellingle. When we were children, we used to think that when we were grown up, we would no longer be vulnerable. But to grow up is to accept vulnerability. To be alive is to be vulnerable. Blessed be.
Next, we'll sing hymn 151, and as soon as we're done with the hymn, Mindy is going to play a postlude for us, so I invite you to please stay and listen for that. And then when she is done, we can all go have coffee and conversation in the Alsop room.
Love your talk, and I love Brené Brown, those thinkers, and I think sometimes shame, going into it and figuring out what it can mean for us, like in a productive way, it's like a wilderness, and we just got to go in there, like, with our head held up high, open to whatever it can teach us. I am ready for the wilderness, and I am not ashamed.
I cannot be tamed. I'm not done. Found some kindness in the wilderness. Wild mothers pour their gifts. I want to give you some of this when you come. I am running away and running toward, running away, running toward. I am running away and running toward. I am running away and running toward. So come and find me in the wilderness. I am drinking from this spring. I am taking everything as it comes. There's forgiveness in the wilderness. My arms around this oak. Trees become my cloak. Then I run. I am running away, running toward, running away, running toward. I am running away, running toward. I am running away, running toward. And I don't know where I'm going, but that's okay. I don't know where I'm going, but that's okay. Step by step, I'm finding my way. And I'm not hiding in the I am gathering some food. I'm searching out the clues to where I'm from. There is darkness in the wilderness, but I can hear my voice better without the noise and the sun. I am running away and running toward, running away, and running toward. I am running away, and running toward. I am running away, and running toward. I know you can all sing. If you want to sing running away and running toward with me, I invite you to join me. I am running away, and running toward. I am running away, and running toward. I am running away, and running toward. I am running away and running toward. I am running away and running toward. I am running away, running toward. I am running away and running toward. I am running away and running toward. And I don't know where I'm going, but that's okay. That's okay.